I'm going to talk about the United States prison system. I'm going to do like an overview. I don't know how many people know about the history of prisons in the United States. I'm going to talk a little bit about resistance that's gone on over the last 500 years. And I'm going to speak a little bit about experiences in the last few years, primarily in Brooklyn and other parts of New York, in terms of building sustainable resistance to colonialism, to empire, to the prison industrial complex. So, just to kind of know where people are at, who knows about the transatlantic slave trade? You never know. You guys are all the way up here. but really. So, the transatlantic slave trade. In order to consolidate, in order to save vast amounts of money, in order to continue with the manifest destiny that different empires in Europe were, you know, pushing forward, they decided that as opposed to dealing with indentured servants, which are people that eventually would get their payoff, or in dealing with low-level laborers, that one of the best ways for them to save money and to solidify capital was to force free labor, you know, i.e. slavery. The first, it's if you look at records, they'll be different, they'll give you different times, but the first Africans who were enslaved arrived in the United States in the early 1500s, some might say 1520, some books might say 1555. So for about 500 years. When that first happened, you know, the first few boatloads of Africans, it was in the intent of empire to take it where it went, but they at that time, when they were first bringing over laborers and they were first bringing over people to help build infrastructure, it wasn't as if they were saying, okay, this is our next plan for 250 years. That kind of came out of the benefits of what actually stealing people from Africa, like she was saying, destroying their culture, destroying their language, destroying their sense of religion, their sense of family, their sense of community, you know, they decided that, wow, this shit really works. You know, you bring these folks over, you destroy everything they have, you give them nothing, you force them to work. Like, you know, for a capitalist, that's a good hustle, right? That's a really good hustle. You know, so in terms of the aspect of colonization, you know, it was a cultural genocide. It was people that came from a very rich old culture, right, that were forced here, you know, beaten if you spoke your language, beaten and sometimes mutilated if you attempted to read the colonizer's language. You were ripped apart from your family. Usually husbands and wives were separated. Children from the same family were separated, taken to different plantations. So that was the beginning. Like, that was the beginning of how colonizers, in regards to African people, started the long haul of destroying the culture of African peoples. And now during the same time, just because I know this is more relevant here, during the same time that although they were destroying the culture of African people and they were really hell-bent on it, they were also destroying the culture of indigenous people, but with a different intent. With African people, it was, what was the lowest common denominator? Like, what was the least they could survive with, right? Pig's feet, rags, you know, a shack. Whereas with indigenous people, it was not what was the least they can survive with, but what's the least we can do to kill them, right? So so if you know about smallpox in the blankets, like, again, good hustle, not much work, maximum effect. That was the beginning thinking of how colonialism started to root itself in America, right? Now, at the same time, all this is going on, an empire spreading, empires destroying, right? Naturally, because as long as it's been empire, there's been resistance to empire. So during all that, you had revolts. You had communities known as Maroon communities, or Quilombos in Brazil, that freed themselves, you know, through armed resistance and established free communities. You had the Underground Railroad, which, although, you know, when Africans got to the north and they found out slavery wasn't free, you know, it was just more profitable, you know, they ended up having to live with indigenous people in the north. But there was always resistance. You know, there was always resistance as long as, even, you know, when Africans were coming over, there was a lot of them that decided we're not going, and they would jump into the ocean. You know, so before even slavery became this monster that it was, there was resistance from day one to slavery, and that's one thing I just really want to stress and make clear. So, you know, 100 years passes, 200 years passes, another 50 years passes. All of a sudden, it's becoming more of a burden than it's worth, you know? Plantations are becoming destabilized. I don't know if you know about Nat Turner. Anyone's heard of Nat Turner? Huge slave rebellion, killed master, killed master's wife, killed master's children, killed master's friends, killed master's business partners. So there was this kind of destabilization that was going on. And just like here, whenever there's, you know, real shit that's going on, what does the government like to do? It likes to make you look over here in the corner while all this is going on over here. So again, to consolidate and to move forward, we had the Civil War. Contrary, I mean, maybe they might, I don't know how they might teach it up here if they teach about the American Civil War. It was not to free the slaves, right? It was to consolidate capital, you know? So, 1865, right? Emancipation Proclamation. Slave, you know, Africans, formerly slaves, supposedly now free. What do they do the exact same year that they free the slaves in 1865? You know, does anyone, this is the teacher in me, anyone know what document they came that is so eloquent they came up with in 1865?
I don't remember what document it was, but it was when they made it legal for prisoners to do
labor. 13th Amendment.
Yeah.
13th Amendment, right? Slavery shall be abolished except, right, as a form of punishment for those duly convicted, right? So what they did was they really nationalized slavery, right? Because here you had all these different plantations, all these different, right, kind of feudal economic bases that were competing for money, competing for land. The slaves become freed, and all of a sudden they have the 13th Amendment and the Black Codes. Right, and the Black Codes were basically really like these things that still go on today in New York, where you can't really, supposedly they're not around anymore, but if you congregate on the corner, pigs are going to roll up on you. You know, if you're not in a white neighborhood and you're standing on the corner, you know, pigs are going to come up on you. If you're walking down the street, pigs are going to come up on you. So that was one of the things where it's like blacks cannot congregate in groups of, I believe it was like three or more, two or more on the corner. Right? So all of a sudden, these long lists of all these new laws targeting blacks, you know, hit the books, and all of a sudden, a prison population that was so small, in the thousands, primarily white, right, jumped into tens of thousands, no time, prisons started being built, and all of a sudden, the capitalists were like, wait a minute, this is really profitable. So, if you look at what's going on during that time, during the Emancipation Proclamation, and in the years following that, you have the vigilantism, right? You have groups like the Ku Klux Klan who started up. You have a lot of government support of vigilante groups, right? Because now the government's saying, we're not responsible anymore for maintaining shadow slavery for Africans, right? They're free. We need to find some way to criminalize them. We need to find some way to keep them in control. So they would look the other way, sometimes gave material support to groups like the Klan, who were there to kind of be that buffer to maintain control over freed Africans. Just kind of touched on it. The other thing that really kind of sets that period apart, as newly freed Africans were gaining economic stability, right? As they were developing their own towns, their own infrastructures. Maybe you saw the movie Rosewood. Many massacres like that happened, right? And at the same time, new forms of criminalization were being put on those freed Africans. And more, these newly freed Africans found themselves locked up in prison, right? So from about 1865, you know, to, say, the 1920s and 30s, there's that subtle yet menacing character. Jim Crow basically was a really important turning point for capital in terms of officially now confirming that Africans are second-class citizens, right? So it continued like this for some time, right? And of course, resistance was going on all of the time. All that time, there was always resistance going on. Whether if you look at the Marcus Garvey Starship Line in the, like in the early 1900s up to in Detroit with the Scottsboro Boys when labor really organized, and you have all these instances of resistance that's going along concurrent to whatever capital is trying to impose on the people, right? But yet still